Hey guys, welcome back to the Social Distance Podcast. This is a very special episode. Unfortunately, George is on his way to New Zealand, so he couldn't join us today. But we do have a special guest. We've got Hannah Barnes here with us as the third host of the show. And she gives us some great insight into her new team, her Army-based boot camp they did just a couple of weeks ago in preparation for the 2022 season. We talk about the Women's Tour de France, what that means to women's cycling. And we talk about a whole lot of other bullshit like we normally do. Like, share, subscribe. Ooh.
We're preparing the biggest ever New Year's Eve party in the history of New Zealand. That's a big one, Sam.
That's a massive one. We talk about preparing the biggest ever New Year's Eve party in about 6 weeks' time. We haven't started planning it yet, but it's in 6 weeks. So give the show a listen and you'll get all the details about that. Like, share, subscribe.
I'm not prepared for this.
This is going to be a good one. I can sense it.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Fucking G.
Are we? I'm so excited.
Well, you can't impeach somebody that's doing a great job.
From Suchin, Tendulkar.
Bruce Gigolo.
George Bennett, you deserve this, big fella.
What's that solution?
he's put the finger straight through the one ply.
We try and create a comfortable environment. There's no bullshit.
There's just so many of them, aren't there, though? They just don't like it.
Nelson, be proud. Yeah, baby.
Welcome back to a very special edition of the Social Distance Podcast. This is special for a couple of reasons. Firstly, it's amazingly special because George isn't here.
Well, George does send his regards.
There he is.
With that ET finger. Yeah. He gives a middle ET finger and says, sorry, can't make it today.
George is on his way back to New Zealand. So, and unfortunately, we couldn't fit an episode in during the week before he got on the plane, but he's on his way back to New Zealand. So very soon we'll have all three of us in more or less the same time zone. So you might, if you're lucky, get some accuracy out of us, get some consistency. Unlikely. But what's making it extra special is we do have a third host here. It's my girlfriend who's stuck in MIQ with me, God forbid for her sake, is Hannah Barnes. She's made her way all the way to New Zealand. And so she's going to be joining us on the show today, not just as a guest, but as a host.
Well, it's about time we added a bit of class for this show. How are you going in quarantine, Hannah?
Yeah, it's okay. First time in New Zealand, I didn't think it was going to be like this for the first time, but it's pretty good. We're trying to get 10,000 steps today, so we're just jogging on the spot, mostly.
It's got reality TV show written all over it, I reckon. Like, can you survive a week in quarantine with your partner? Because that, for me, would be the ultimate test.
Well, mate, if it was 2 weeks, we'd be struggling. Look, we're 3 days in, and Hannah said we're trying to go for 10,000 steps today. So you might ask, why am I drinking a glass of wine while I'm recording the show at 3:15 on Thursday afternoon? And it's a bit of a catch-22 because I had a conversation with my mum the other day and she said, oh, can you get alcohol in MIQ? I said, you can, but I'm doing a week alcohol-free. And then she said, oh, I've just done 2 weeks alcohol-free. I only had 3 beers. I said, well, you fucking didn't do 2 weeks alcohol-free. You had 3 beers. So she's going to be looking at me, watching the show, thinking, what the – he is full of shit, my son. Love him, but full of shit. But the reason I've got this wine, quick little plug before we continue with the show is – very loyal listener of the show reached out to me the other day. He runs an all natural wine store here in Auckland, where we were in MIQ.
But hang on, all natural is that implying that wine is not natural? Isn't it just grapes that they stamp on, ferment? What's not natural about that?
Thankfully, he said, don't stress about too much of a shout out because I don't know how to answer that question. So we'll just, yeah. I think it's no sulfites, or, you know, isn't it? Isn't natural wine like when they don't add pesticides or sulfites and stuff?
Well, I remember when we went to Germany, they said the same thing, but with beer. They go, no, all natural ingredients. And the big spin off was it doesn't give you a hangover. Like, you know, the less pesticide, all the crap they add into it, the better you feel.
I want to give these guys a plug. They're called Everyday Wine. They're on K Road in Auckland. They've got same day delivery in Auckland. They've got 1 or 2 day delivery nationwide. They're massive cycling fans. Their names are Dan, Steve, and Ash. They love cycling. They love the podcast. They've hooked me up a couple of bottles of wine. So I wanted to give them that quick little plug before I respond to your acknowledgement of the fact that if it's natural, it doesn't give you a hangover, complete bullshit. I guarantee that if I drink these two bottles of wine that he gave me, natural or not, I'll be hung tomorrow.
Well, there's only one way to find out. It looks like you've got a pretty big day ahead.
I already know. I already know the answer. It's not. I'm not even going down that wormhole.
But can I talk to the elephant in the room? And obviously, I want to ask the questions that people want to know. The worst thing about being in a confined room is I'm regular as clockwork in the morning. And we know where we're going with this. How do you get around that as a couple? Do you have like a pre-packed thing of matches? Do you have to say, right, you know, this is the schedule. You can't go into the bathroom for at least 90 minutes. That intrigues me because that would freak me out.
Well, we are jet lagged, so our toilet routine's a bit off at the moment. But
okay, well, so you're just going to try and hang on for a week.
See you in a second.
Normally, we're pretty regular. We're an AM pooers.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it's any point. But no, we just turn the telly up a little bit louder.
Oh, yeah. And that's when you run the tap. It's like, how can someone wash their hands for 3 minutes?
Well, we did do the first day we did a supermarket shop, and I put air freshener in there. Just so you never perfect. Know. Just,
Smart.
Yeah, it's actually not bad in here. Look. Everyone, I'm sure everyone has better things to do with their lives than spend 7 days in a hotel. But to be fair, it has actually been all right. I mean, as much as I'd love to get out of here, the hotel we're in Auckland City, we're at the Sheraton, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
4 points by Sheraton or something. I've got to say, it's run by the military. It's, you know, I'm sure it's fucking boring for the military, but it's probably better than Afghanistan at this point, to be fair. So they're doing all right. But they're super friendly. The food's awesome. It's actually not a bad experience, to be fair, for someone who doesn't want to be here.
Well, last time we did the show, Bills, George gave us insights for, you know, like off season. He had to do the camp with UAE. It sounded like, you know, it wasn't much of a camp. There was a lot of time just to drive Formula One cars or whatever. But Hannah, you've changed teams, and Bills was saying that you had to do like a military style boot camp. What was that like?
It was really good. Actually, we did a track day as well. It wasn't in F1 cars, but we did a track day in Toyota. I don't know what it was. It was fast, though. And it was on real slippy Norwegian, like where they teach Norwegian lorry drivers to drive in ice and snow and whatnot. So we did that, and it was with an old, like a retired professional driver. So that was pretty cool. But at that point, I'd given my phone in. We had 48 hours, no phones and no watches. So we had no idea what time it was or couldn't contact anyone. It's pretty nice, actually.
And then, what do they do? Like military style, running up hills with logs and sandbags, or
yeah. So we had a nice evening dinner, 3-course meal, a few drinks, some speeches, and then we had the phone call went in our rooms at 7 a.m. go to breakfast, but we had no idea that 7:30 a.m. on the Friday morning was the last meal we were going to have until 12 p.m. that Saturday afternoon. So it was pretty cool. But we drove like straight to the army base. And then they pretty much just took all our stuff off us. We packed a bag of everything they said. They had to look through, make sure we hadn't snuck any food in, because they gave us an onion, a potato, and a bar of chocolate between six of us for the next 36 hours.
So what did you have to just trim it into six bits and then ration out the sixth of a bit? I would have just snaked the whole group, stolen the chocolate bar, and just ran for the hills.
Well, actually, I was going to be in charge of the food, but they wouldn't let me, which they didn't even know me at that point. They still didn't trust me with the chocolate, but no, it was actually real good. We didn't sleep much, and it was pretty funny because I had no phone, and Sam was flying to England to meet my family for the second time, and I had no way of contacting him. He didn't contact me, and after an hour and a half, I landed in Heathrow after a pretty epic 2 days at 6 p.m., drove for 3 hours, and at 9 p.m., Dad was waiting outside the house and just said, brace yourself, and I walked into just chaos. But, yeah.
But the whole goal of these boot camps, right, you know, you hear teams doing it, you know, way back in the day. I think Bjarne Riis used to love it with, you know, the Danish military, and it's obviously all to get riders to, you know, basically get them to their limit, but it brings them together. Is this something that you think works?
Yeah, I think because you're at your most vulnerable, I guess. when you're hungry and tired, like your true colors come out, I guess. And everyone was still fine by the end. It was actually a really good, I mean, I keep telling the stories to everyone and they're like, that sounds awful, especially George. He was not thrilled by it.
George but I really enjoyed it. He'd hate that. Could you imagine George Bills in that scenario?
I was talking to George about it as well. We had a conversation with me, Hippie. Hannah was telling Hippie and I and George about it, about the trip, you know. And George, I think, had experienced something similar in a team back in the day. And there's no doubt that George is capable of it. He's a little bit of a mongrel. But at the same time, his point was, at the end of October, I've just finished a full-on season. I'm fucking tired. I just want to rest. I don't need to be in the army. I don't need to be in the army for 24 hours. I don't want to do that. You know, I don't need to be out of my comfort zone. I've been out of my comfort zone all year, freezing my ass off for the Giro or, you know, bouncing over cobbles. And he had a point. But Hippie was like, nah, fucking bring it on, you know. And I'm a bit the same as Hippie. Like, I thought the camp that Hannah did was awesome because if you go to, what's your Instagram page? Uno X team?
Yeah. Uno X, yeah.
Uno X team. So Hannah's writing for Uno X next year. If you go to Uno X team, you can see all the photos of it. And it was full-on military boot camp. And they did the men's team did it a couple of weeks prior, and then the women's team did it, you know, last week. And like Hannah says, like, it brings out, it puts you in a position that hate the person next to you or love the person next to you, it doesn't matter. It actually doesn't matter, because if you want to get from A to B, carrying that fucking log or carrying that tire or dragging a battery or dragging a pretend injured body, it doesn't matter if you hate the person. You're like, well, mate, if I don't get out of here, you're not getting out of here. So we've got to do it. And I guess it shows you what your body is capable of as well. Like, I think, you know, Hannah's probably better to tell the story, but at one point one night, they, you know, they walked all night and did all this bloody climbing over walls and dragging tires and things. And then they got to a campground. They said, right, I pitched this tent. So they pitched this tent. They said, oh, take it down, pitch the tent again, pitch it again, take it down. Okay, now you're not sleeping in a tent tonight. So build a fire, get comfortable, get warm. This is where we're staying tonight. They build a fire. Half an hour later, an hour later, some army dude, get up! Up, 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 up! 3 o'clock in the morning, 5 hour hike, beep test, jumping off into cold water, like full on military boot camp. And I reckon the best thing about the whole thing, military camp aside, at any training camp in October for a team, any training camp, take your fucking phones off them. That's so good. Chuck your phones in a bowl day one. We'll give them back to you on day three when it's over, because we don't need to be bloody putting the crap up on Instagram and all that. What you need to be doing is communicating with the people that you're there with. And that's how you, like, so many, you see it now, even in our team, you go, you know, like with young guys coming in. And I understand a lot of young guys coming into our team, particularly if they're European, they struggle a little bit with the colloquial English or the way we speak or the slang or how fast we speak. I understand that those people struggle like a little bit to be a part of conversations, especially when you start pouring a few wines down everyone's throats. So they, it's easy for them to flick to their phone and just, you know, text their girlfriend in whatever language or jump on Instagram, whatever. But if you take the phone away, that's like a boot camp for them anyway. That's taking them right out of their comfort zone. And it gives them that time to you've got no option but to communicate with the people that you're with. And I think that's a massive way to bond a team of new people, especially in Hannah's situation, a brand new team. All these riders have come from different teams. A lot of them have never been together before, with the exception of a couple. And that's a hell of a way to bond people, you know, I reckon, as a team.
There's a great story about Oliver Stone when he shot that movie Platoon. I think it was in like 1986. And they were going to film it in, I think it was like Papua New Guinea or around there. And at the time, there was this big military coup. But Oliver Stone, he was in the army and he wrote Platoon based on his own experiences. So he said, I'm not going to shoot this film and have these actors pretend that they're, you know, army vets or whatever. I'm going to put them through like a 2-week boot camp before we start filming. And when people in the film die off, they leave the set. And these actors hated it. Like, they were literally out of their comfort zone. They go, what the fuck is this? We're not used to this. We used to have our like cabin and our trailer and we get makeup and then we go shoot. And when they did the first night, same thing. They threw him a shovel and Johnny Depp and that is going, fuck, what is going on here? He goes, dig a trench. That's your bed for the night. When they dug the trench, they got these pyrotechnics guys to let, you know, bombs and that go. And then they whacked a herd of goats up the ass and they had all these sort of like dummy guns and they were just like letting rounds go. And then when they were filming, they said it was just as bad. Like Oliver Stone went like, you know, bloody bunter on the set. And he was literally going, there was one scene when they had a helicopter, was flicking up stones, and Charlie Sheen's going, fucking hell, man. You know, this isn't safe. And he goes, oh, yeah, you're going to be a little fucking pussy, are you? A couple of little stones. You want to go back to your little cabin at Malibu there? Yeah, like just bait them. It's fantastic. There's a doco on YouTube. Like, you have to check it out for sure. But I think it's the same thing. Like, yeah, you know, get out of your comfort zone. But for you, Hannah, like, you know, you're 6 years at Canyon. We asked George what it was like when he transferred to go into a new team. It was like first day of school. How'd you go in that new environment, new people, new team? How'd you handle that side of things?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm going in as the old one, which sounds super strange to me, being the mature one, let's say. And that's kind of my role going into the team next year. Is the team's very young. There was actually, we were sat at dinner on the Friday night, and I was like, oh, just gin and tonic, please, blah, blah, blah. And this, there was a Finnish rider, Anina, and she turned 18 2 weeks ago. I was like, wow, okay, wow. So this, the team's real young. She's first year out of juniors. So I'm kind of there on the team as the mentor, kind of guiding them through the peloton, because it's pretty hard. I've been there and I've done it. It's, you have no middle ground. It's, you go from junior level straight to elite. So those first few years are pretty hard. I did 1 year and really struggled, and then made my way over to America as like my kind of smaller jump. But yeah, I'm just going to go there. And that's how I felt going into the camp. I'm not always the most confident, pretty shy sometimes, but I just knew that I had to come across as, yeah, just, you can always come to me and rely on me if you need any help. And I hope I showed that. I mean, I was in a team of six, and there was three teams, and we were the slowest. We didn't do the tasks the fastest. There was this obstacle course at the start that took us way longer than it did all the other teams. But just how we did it and got through it together, I think, was kind of what it showed to be a teammate. It's not always how fast you are, and the strongest don't always win. It's how you actually work together and achieve the result.
Given that you got experience, like, do you get pull? Like, when you come to a team, do you get to go, all right, these are the races that I want to do?
She's pulled, look.
But do you literally get to go, right, these are the races I want to do. If you want to sign me, here's the terms. Or is it you're trying to obviously get your best foot forward, whatever you want, I'll do, and just go along?
I guess you can, but that's not really my personality. I'll just, whatever race you want me to go to, I'll do it. I mean, for me, I just love racing. But the team's hoping to be world tour next year, which means we're going to be doing the biggest race in the calendar. And they're so excited about the Women's Tour de France. Because it's just huge. I mean, the team started in 2016 with the men. And it's progressed now. I mean, they're going to have a camp in December, which I'm unfortunately going to miss, where there's going to be over 100 members of staff there, riders and the backroom staff. So they've gone from a team of 16 pretty much to three teams now. So yeah, for them just to be there and representing the, you know, X in those big races, I think is great. And yeah, I'd love to show the young riders what it is to be in those big races.
All right. So the juicy stuff is, this your first trip to New Zealand, yeah?
Yeah.
So what has Bewley told you about New Zealand? Because I famously went over there in 2015. We did like a My Piece of the World trip. One thing he didn't brief me on is the smell in Rotorua. Like the first day, it led to severe headaches. Then I got used to it. And I got to a point where I had to fart in the room just to freshen it up.
Well, actually, it wasn't Sam that told me that it smelled. My mum came here when she was 18 to shear sheep.
Oh, yeah?
And she, when I said, oh, yeah, Sam is from Rotorua, she was like, oh, it stinks of eggs. So,
do you want to explain to the listeners, Bills, why is that? Why does Rotorua smell like a rotten fart?
Well, it wasn't too bad up until 2015. Once you left, it was. No, it's just geothermal. geothermal, mate. We live in a crater in Rotorua, so we're surrounded by a lot of geysers. A lot of geothermal activity. It just creates a stench. Like, I don't even really notice it. Hannah won't notice it after a while. If it rains.
Yeah, because I've been in a room with Sam for a week.
That's it. But yeah, it's just geothermal stuff. But look, I'm looking forward to getting back to Rotorua, actually. It's been, I'm sure everybody that's listened to the show knows, it's been near on 2 years since I've been home. Lots happened in 2 years. There was a pandemic, and I got obviously a girlfriend with Hannah. Like, the listeners have been like just prodding me for ages about this. Like, oh, has Buell's got a girlfriend now? And I've been quiet, with the exception of a couple of Instagram posts. But I do, because she's
you're such a catch. Already. That's why. Such That's a catch.
Right. Yeah. But anyway, I'm looking forward to training on New Zealand roads. It's interesting actually for Hannah now, because you've never been to New Zealand or Australia, have you? So coming into a new season next year, into a new team, doing the preseason in the summer as opposed to in the winter.
Mm.
Yeah. And I've got my camp in January is the picture camp, the photo camp, media. So I'm going to have a nice tan. Gonna look good.
Well, Bills, what are some of the things you got planned then? Because that's pressure, mate. This is the first time to New Zealand. You'd want to bring your A game. So you start with the all-natural wines. And then you obviously, what are you going to do? The luge? You're going to do the, what's the other activities we did? Those bouncy balls that you can go down the hill on?
Yeah.
The, what was it? Not the rock, white water rafting. Just be careful with that. You got to go on the right tides.
We're having a real nice week in Auckland at the moment. So that was the first treat.
Mm.
Thing to see here. No, we haven't got, it's hard to know what to plan because it's all a bit funny here with COVID and everything at the moment. Like, Auckland's in lockdown at the moment. So, and COVID's slowly starting to spread throughout the whole country now. But the vaccine rate's high. I think that, you know, I watched the 1 p.m. Jacinda Ardern does this 1 p.m. press conferences every day. And she gives us these details without really giving any details into what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been following what's happened in New Zealand just because I'm a New Zealand citizen, but I've been away for a couple of years. So I was more focused on, you know, what I had to do and what I had to deal with over in Europe. But you keep a track on the country that your parents are living in and your family's in and stuff. But not until I watched this 1 p.m. press conference last night where I was just like, last night, yesterday afternoon, where I was like, what the fuck is going on over here? Like, mate, Auckland City's got 90% or more, I think, 90% vaccination. And they're in lockdown. It makes no sense to me. Like, where's the end game? Anyway, I digress. What we're going to do in New Zealand depends heavily on what Jacinda decides we can do. And if that means that we can travel around a bit, absolutely we will. There's some beautiful parts of the country I'd love to show Hannah. Cool places to go do some training. Beach towns I typically visit that I'd love to get back to. At the moment, it's all looking okay.
Is New Zealand in a week of mourning after losing yet another Cricket World Cup final?
We actually lost cricket today as well to the Indians in the T20 series in India.
Yeah.
That's why it's on the line at 3 o'clock.
What is the go with New Zealand and just getting to the final and choking?
We just fart our way through tournaments, eh? And we just sniveling through these results, and we just sort of, you know, things just swing our way at these certain moments, and then we make the final, and then we can't finish it off. But mate, we're fucking great. New Zealand cricket team's awesome. We've been in the final of the last three World Cups across all formats. Which one of them we won, the Test match series, which is the only format in cricket that matters.
Oh, so now he's going to shift the narrative. Yeah, not now, well played.
So we are the greatest cricket nation on the planet.
Yeah, for
undoubtedly.
Sure. We're talking obviously about off seasons, and I was chatting to you last week, and I go, mate, I've got a cracker from 2012. I remember the first year of Green Edge. You know, I was living out of a suitcase, and I still had an apartment here in Melbourne that I was my parents owned. And when I got back, my old man was like, all right, you got to move all your shit out. Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing with the rest of your life? But I said, oh, I think I'm going to do another 2 years with the team, so I'm going to go live in Europe. All right, well, you need to get rid of all your shit. And I said, yeah, okay, no worries. Lock it in. We'll move it on a Sunday. The problem is I went out the night before on the Saturday, didn't get in till 4 or 5 o'clock. Emu's rolled up with like a removalist truck, had to do the whole move himself. And then when I finally come to it about 2 p.m., he's driving the van. He's just like, get in the car. And we drove back to sale and he's got all my shit. And then as compensation for the build, remember those old Garmin Navmans that used to get? He's fleeced that and thought, oh, well, I'll pocket that. He's not going to use that. I'll keep it. And then he's finally found a reason to use this Navman. And I get a phone call from him one day and he goes, what the bloody hell's the go with that Garmin you got that I swiped from you? What are you talking about? And he goes, he had to drive a work trip. And there was a young girl that was on like work experience. It was her first day. And Emu was like, oh, praise, got his Garmin, plugs into Terrelgan. But he didn't realize that you could change the voices on the Garmin. And I changed it to horny English woman. And so he's driving off with this young 18-year-old. And he gets to the first roundabout. She goes, at the roundabout, my lover, turn right. And then you can stick your fingers in my boob. He reckons. He literally almost drove over the roundabout, like had a crash. This girl's looked at him like, what the fuck is going on here? He's trying to like turn it off. And I said, mate, lucky you didn't merge onto a freeway because she's crook when she starts talking like that. But basically, you could change the voices to whatever you wanted. And this horny English woman, like,
was that a feature on there?
Is it? No. It was like a crack. So these people have designed. People have designed these voiceovers that you could download on, you know, the dark web. And I plugged it in and it was hilarious. She was crook. And I just left it on because it was funny. And the first roundabout, like he's almost binned it. Oh, classic. So,
he's probably still running it, Emu, isn't he?
He definitely was running it for a few years once he could change the voice. Because at one point there, remember when Garmin used to sponsor, obviously, Garmin cycling team, Whitey had to record a voiceover and you could select Matt White's voice, for the Garmin, like when you're traveling around. But someone's obviously hacked it and you could purchase it, but I got the crack version. But he's never lived that one down. Fucking classic. Oh,
so good. Yeah. But I was thinking while we got Hannah here that when you were speaking earlier, Hannah, about the Women's Tour de France came up, like why don't we talk about that a bit? Because it's very rare and for no reason, one way or another, that we get female guests on. Mm. We should maybe do that more. But we have one today, as you can, 27.
Well, we had Grace Elvin on about a year ago, didn't we?
Yeah. We did. And but the since then, the Women's Tour de France has been released and announced. There's a lot of water under the bridge since the last female guest we had on.
That's right.
Remember how flustered I got last time that happened?
I think we did about 4 takes. And we said, Sam, just relax. It's still a human. Like, you're still talking to a person.
I remember Gracie saying to me, do you even know how to ask a question?
That's like, right. Well, I don't think we've improved that much. So
shocking, eh? Tell us about the Women's Tour de France, Hannah. How do you feel about it? How do you feel about the fact that it's actually the Tour de France? It's organized by the ASO. It's going to have the caravans. It's going to have the same finishing barriers. It's going to everything about the Tour de France is going to be the same. Obviously, it's a week later. So it starts with the Champs-Élysées. The men's finish on the Champs-Élysées. The women start on the Champs-Élysées. And then you guys finish on Planche de Belfi 7 days later with a whole lot of other things in the middle there, gravel stages. But it's the Tour de France. It's actually the Women's Tour de France. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think the main reasons that UNOX wanted to start a women's team was because they knew that female sport was going up and they wanted to be part of that. So for the Women's Tour de France to be next year is huge. And it's 8 days as well. We're actually saying that July for us is going to be super busy next year because we'll have the Giro and then the Tour de France within, I think, 3 weeks of each other. So,
everyone's going to want to be gunning for that role at the Tour de France. So if you're trying to plan your season, obviously you want to peak in the races leading up to get the selection. So a lot of people are going to have the same idea, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually interesting because we've all got to be coached by the team coaches. So it's actually nice. I've never been with a team that's had the team a team coach, so they're gonna coach us.
The best thing about this everyday wine is that they pour it out of a tap into reusable bottles, which is very, very handy.
There you go, mate.
You can't leave the room to go refill it.
It only costs two bottles of wine to get a decent plug out of Sam Bewley. Like, you've sold yourself pretty at a low bar there, mate. That's good.
It's alcohol.
It's the best offer I've ever had, so what do you want me to do?
That's it. But the telecast as well, they're gonna obviously have full coverage of all the 8 days, which is huge. Like, everything comes back to the simple formula of if it's on TV, massive.
Yeah, that's just what we need. I mean, we've got 64 World Tour race days next year, which is 64 race days with TV coverage. So for us to get that is huge. It's like the triangle of media, sport, and money. So yeah, that's going to do wonders for this for the sport.
I think the fact that they did the women's, I don't know if there was any discussion about it, but initially when the ASO announced that they were going to do a women's Tour de France, there was a huge buzz of excitement and everything. And then they did the release, the presentation along with the men in Paris, well, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks ago or whatever it was, or a month ago. And they released the fact that the women's Tour de France was going to be running a week later, starting the day that the men's Tour de France finishes. And initially I thought, oh, it would have been cool to run it concurrently, you know, at the same time and have the whole Tour de France festival. But then as I thought about it more, I think it's much better that it's a separate event. Much, much better, because the number one thing that women's cycling needs and what and actually deserves is TV coverage from start to finish. You know, there's been some, they had it for the Olympics, they had it for Paris-Roubaix, more or less. They started Paris-Roubaix from at least the first cobble sector, didn't they?
Sad.
And like all that racing was so good to watch. They deserve and they need that full coverage, not just the last hour or the last 45 minutes when you don't know what the hell's happening. So the best thing that's happened for the women for this Tour de France is that it's the week later, because they can do that. If the men's Tour de France is on, they get no TV coverage. Simple as that. Because the men's Tour de France, they put it on at bloody 9:30 in the morning. You listen to Laurent Jalabert ramble on about all the jerseys he won in the 90s and blah, 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 blah. And then you watch the stage from kilometer one to the finish. You wouldn't get any coverage for the women. So it's great. I think it's really good that it's going to be the week later. And, you know, that Tour de France fever is still going to be there in France. They love it. The French people love it. They'll be on the side of the road for the women's race, women's stages as much as the men's. I guarantee it.
And it gets lost in the mess as well. So not only the TV coverage, if it was on at the same time, all the articles, all the press, whereas a lot of people that love the tour, they almost get to a come down because they've been watching it every night for 3 weeks. This can extend that out.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of people that don't usually watch women's cycling are always surprised when they do and just enjoy how exciting it is. I mean, the stages are a lot shorter, so we have action from the get-go. There's no one just, you don't see us just sat next to each other in twos having a little chat and catching up. It's from kilometer zero, it's races on. So yeah, it's just like a different race, I guess. I always see women's cycling as a different sport compared to the men's, because it's so different and the dynamic is so different. So yeah, it's gonna be good.
And Bules, I saw you post on social that you rode in a gravel race with was it Bennett? What's the addiction there? Because it looks like that's starting to take off as well.
Gravel scene, yeah. It's massive. The UCI's bought it, I guess, or no. The UCI is finally, we know how the UCI work. They've gone ding, 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 dollar signs in the eyes, and they've gone, oh, there's a cash cow there. Let's milk it. And they've created a world gravel series next year that, you know, a number of people will be doing, and it'll be a UCI registered events and blah blah blah. And my understanding, actually, from the true gravelers, and I don't know how public this is, but it's certainly about to become public to about 10,000 people, that the people that really, really love gravel and really push gravel, you know, a lot of them are Americans, guys that race the American scene, like the Belgian Waffle Ride and race and a number of other big gravel events over there that get, mate, they get like 15,000 people at those events. I was riding with a friend of ours, Dennis Van Winden, the other day, and he's fully into the gravel scene now. So he's made a trip across America 3 or 4 times this year for those events. And he said it's unbelievable, 15,000 people. Next year there's a series coming in from a sponsor that's going to have $180,000 prize pool across 4 events. Like, the money is huge. The popularity is huge. And then, of course, the UCI saw that. So these guys who are racing that scene in America, I think there's a very good chance, chance of a breakaway there, a bit of a boycott. Like, no, we're not going to turn up to your UCI races. We don't want it to be UCI. We want it to be mass participation, but we want it to still be competitive for the, you know, the 150 people that want to race it. And it's actually a really cool scene. And in Europe now, in Girona and in Andorra, we're all right into it. We love it. Like, it's a bit of a supplement to our road training. And throughout the season, we don't do as much of it. But over the past 4 or 5 weeks, you know, myself, Heppy, Durbo, Mitch, George, Schultze, like heaps of us have just been going up. We're off the bike. You're having 4 weeks off the bike. But twice a week, we just go out for a cool gravel ride. Imps loves it. And just, you can just explore brand new places. There's, the best thing about it is it's safe. There's no cars, you know. You know, you can stop and have a beer as well, and halfway through, and you're only going to hurt yourself if you're a bit boozed on the way home. And not that we do that, but it's real craze at the moment, and a lot of people there's still the traditionalists that resist it. You know, like, oh no, but I fucking embrace it. I think it's awesome.
And yeah, but don't the events go massive because they think about the overall experience? Like, you know, you've got DJs, you've got food and beer tents. Like, you've got to create an atmosphere where people go, this is not just a race, it feels like a party.
Yeah, it's like any mass participation event, you know. Like, whether do you guys have the Colour Run in Australia? That's a big thing in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And like things like that, just something on a Sunday morning that's like for everybody, for families. And if you want to go to the Colour Run, or if you want to go to a marathon or anything, and you want to go and run your fastest time, you can do that. If you want to go to a marathon and you just want to complete it in 5-6 hours, you can also do that. And it doesn't matter. And when you cross the line, everyone gets a free beer voucher, a free sausage sizzle voucher. You get a massage. Everyone hangs out. Everyone goes to the pub afterwards. Everyone goes to a restaurant afterwards. It's like, it's just a cool, fun vibe. And the event we did, we actually spoke about it briefly on the last show we did, was just before the Social Distance Podcast Health Retreat. We did a small gravel event. And that was only small. It was only 250 people there or something. But it was awesome. Got there early on Sunday morning. You know, we finished it. We had a free paella at the end of it. Just like a fun vibe.
Give Hannah a word, mate.
Yeah. Gosh, hogging the microphone. It was good, though, because it was Durbo, Happy, and Sam did it. And then we went down. So me, Lara, and Caitlin headed down there, and we were there for probably 45 minutes before the guys came in, and you just saw these couples crossing the line, holding their hands up, like these kids, families, like father and son. And like the whole event was great. Like, you can go there and you can race it, and then you can go there and suffer through it like the guys did. And then we just had a real good paella lunch afterwards, and yeah, I think it was pretty cool. Hopefully we can do it next year. I'd like to.
We did one the other weekend, actually, the service course, which is the, you know, the bike shop in Girona. They did a gravel bonanza a couple of Saturdays ago, and it was just like it was about 120 people there, whatever, a really cool course. But they put on a great event. They had, halfway through the course, they had a band playing, and they had lunch there and everything. And at the end of it, you got a Dos Kiwis beer from our friends at Dos Kiwis, who we've promoted on the show before. And Hannah had never ridden a gravel bike before. She's done had done quite a bit of mountain biking, but we got her a gravel bike through the service course, and you loved it, eh? It was just such a fun Saturday. We were both hungover as shit. We had that massive barbecue, remember, the night before at Olga and Frances, and we reversed into it hugely, but it was such a fun day.
That's the fastest way to get over it. Just sweat it out.
Nah, she had anti-doping that morning too, so that got me through it too.
But remember, Bules, I think it was August last year, we told people to write off 2021. We said, look forward to 2022, but we almost guaranteed them that we were going to throw the biggest New Year's Eve party in New Zealand to celebrate 2022. Are we on track?
At the end of it, and you're talking in 6 weeks, the end of this
year? Yeah, we told them in August last year that we were going to throw the biggest ever New Year's Eve party in New Zealand to ring in 2022. Can we do it?
Mate, we can do it. If you're double vaccinated, you can do it. If you're double vaccinated, you can come.
Why don't you set that as your challenge for the listeners? Why don't we organize some sort of massive party, and we'll find a way of getting your old mate Jonesy over there, and let's do it. Get your mates.
There is every chance that at the moment you still have to go into the hotel quarantine and
Fuck.
And you can't. It's not just as simple as getting on a plane and getting here, but that could change between now and then. It could potentially be home isolation. Maybe if that's the case, then get on over here. Give us a week to prepare, and then anyone out there who's got a venue in a relatively popular place. It doesn't matter. We're not popular, so just if you've got a wool shed in the middle of the fucking nowhere, we'll take it.
We'll just call it Well 2022.
Yeah. And we will host the New Year's Eve party. We'll get a band.
Yeah.
I don't know who it'll be. We'll find someone with a guitar and someone with a beard and a cigarette in his mouth.
Can you sing, Hannah?
Some Doc Martens on and some skinny jeans and we'll be right.
Mm. Yeah, I can sing. But you guys have been promising merchandise for over a year now and there's still no merchandise. So I don't think this is going to happen.
Hang on. We've got wheels are in motion, Hannah. There are wheels in motion. And
I heard that last year.
Yeah, well, we told everyone this year was a write-off, and that was including merchandise. But 2022, it will definitely be there. But that's a challenge. I love that challenge. Start thinking about New Year's Eve party. And
I reckon no band, though. No band, karaoke.
Karaoke, and we'll host it. George will be home. We'll host it.
Why don't we host it as like a karaoke competition for New Year's Eve? Yeah. And we can be the judges, and the winner will get two bottles of organic wine.
Yeah, from Everyday Wine, from our mates on K Road.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
It's a no-brainer. Let's do it.
Let's do it. $10 We've a ticket. Time. You want to come along? $10
No,
a ticket.
Just a block of cheddar. Just bring some cheddar cheese and you're in.
There you go.
Yeah, and we could raise money for a charity or something. We're good guys.
I think we should. I think we should charge for the ticket. Let's say $100 a ticket. Social Distance Podcast hosts New Year's Eve, we'll call it. And we'll charge $100 a ticket. We'll take the money that we need to cover the costs of the venue and of whatever the running costs are.
Karaoke machine. That'd be a couple of grand. A good one.
Everything else goes to charity. Yeah. Everything else goes to we'll do a vote online or something for charity. Maybe we can tie it in with Movember. Maybe something to do with male suicide or something. Something like that. We'll chuck all the proceeds to charity.
Yep.
If we can't get this organised, you and me will just donate ourselves, Jonesy.
Okay.
The likelihood of us getting it organised is zero to nothing, isn't it?
Slim to fuck all.
On that note... Like, share, subscribe, everybody. Make sure you head over to our YouTube channel, subscribe there. Subscribe, most importantly, on our Instagram, the Social Distance Podcast on Instagram. That's where we post most of our content. We do have a Twitter page as well. We do have a Facebook page, but most of it's all on Instagram. So if you do have Instagram, go onto the Social Distance Podcast Instagram. Give us a follow. You'll find everything you need to know from there. Thanks to Hannah for coming on.
Thanks to Jones. And George will be back next episode. And our whole mantra is consistency with the dropping of the episodes. You are going to get a consistent schedule. We don't know what that schedule is or what it looks like, but there will be one.
And we're not kidding. George will be back. And when George is back on the next show, we should hopefully be able to say a bit more about a few other things. And like, share, subscribe. Love you all.